It is Saturday, August 4th, 2012. We are broadcasting live from Santa Cruz on the central coast of California. This is KOSP Public Radio. Welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gap between geeks and the rest of humanity. I'm your host, Lyle Troxell. Please keep in mind the views expressed during Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KOSP. Well, we got a great little lineup of geeks today. It's Miles Elam, a software engineer and political junkie. Morning, Miles.
Good morning.
And Mr. Al Luckow, who's a new media architect.
Hi, everybody.
And Bonnie Jean Primsch, mediator, printmaker, and broadcaster at large. Hi.
Hi, I'm no geek. What am I doing here?
Yeah, you're not exactly a geek.
Not exactly.
I'm geek friendly. She is. With regard to radio, she's totally a geek.
Is it geek or expert? Yeah, what happened is we had you on to help us do a wonderful pledge drive show, and the engagement you had and added to the show was so wonderful that I wanted to have you back over and over again.
Well,
so thank you.
Well, I had a good time. I kind of wanted to come back.
Well, that's nice.
Welcome back, you guys.
Well, so what's been on your mind in the tech industry lately? What's on?
Well,
what's
I'm interested in sort of how tech is used for social stuff.
Okay.
And there's a couple of stories that I ran across this week that were interesting.
Lay down your first one. What's it? What's
well, it? One was the whole idea of sexism in gaming.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it's getting pretty bad. I mean, it's been bad, I guess.
No, specifically, you don't mean necessarily the games being developed and how they're aimed more toward male.
No,
you're
no.
talking
just
about
the people interacting in the games.
Right.
Which, unfortunately, isn't limited to just the gaming portion of computing, but...
Right. Yeah.
But so gaming is particularly egregious.
It's particularly rife. And it's sort of interesting that they're trying to track statistics of how many women are actually gaming. Like, I'm not sure if that's supposed to craft the importance they should give, making sure that people are behaving in a way that's at least kind of okay, you know, online with each other. But one interesting thing was this woman started a Kickstarter campaign to just track, you know, just to sort of look at how women were portrayed in games, right? Well, so looking at it from the gaming standpoint, and then the response to her campaign where people were just harassing her like crazy, doctoring sort of pornographic pictures of her. And what she did was create a blog, and she just posted everything that people were sending her. And that created enough outrage that her $6,000 campaign received $150,000, which just made people angry.
Okay, so there's I want to break down a bit of things. When you're doing online games, you're playing all these first-person shooters and such.
Right.
We're talking partially about the sexism in the dialogue of the players, because you can type while you're playing and make comments like, you know, I got you and things of that.
Yeah.
Miles used to tease me all the time about how bad a player I was when we used to play Quake.
Right.
Using
no, I
text.
Accurately assessed skill level.
Okay. I'm going to take the mic down. Yeah. And so, but there was a bit of banter that could be kind of aggressive at times. Of course, it was Miles and I playing, you know, at work somewhere where we were working.
Sure.
So there was a personal relationship there as well. Mm-hmm. And we knew when we were offended every day, Miles. Thank you very much.
Every day.
Every day. So, but on an online forum where you have, you know, 40 people playing, you don't really know who anybody is. You're just playing with random people. You're saying in that environment, there seems to be a lot of rampant sexism in the texts that are happening.
Yeah, but not necessarily among random people. There was a New York Times article this week that I'm sort of drawing from this.
Mm-hmm.
And they start the article off by talking about a woman, Miranda Makodzi, and she was doing a cross-assault video game tournament this year, and her own coach was harassing her, you know, like aiming the camera at inappropriate parts of her body, reaching down and smelling her, asking her about her bra size, asking her to take off her shirt.
Wait, while she was playing, in the physical world, or her character?
In the physical world, yeah.
You mean this wasn't her character?
No, it wasn't her character. That her actual coach was harassing her actual person while they were,
Okay, so what you're saying is that just the cultural and culture in general of online gaming seems to envelop that ideal.
Right. And so now companies, you know, social media companies are trying to figure out, like Microsoft is trying to figure out, is there some way to have some automatic things in place to control kind of, I mean, you could sort of broaden it to trolling.
Right.
Right? I mean,
right,
you can't do much about sort of that in-person interaction that we were just talking about. But at least in virtually, if someone's being offensive to another person, there's got to be some way to kind of automate some kind of things so that what you have is not a troll going, oh, goody, I get the megaphone to the whole school. Everyone has to listen to what I say.
Right.
You know?
So you want something that can weed out creepy guys who play games?
Yes.
Well, then there won't be any game.
Yeah. No, not necessarily weed them out, just mute them. Just make so the comments don't exist.
Yeah, they can Microsoft's, still play, just, you know.
And Microsoft is getting into this because they are the controller of, like, the Xbox Live platform and stuff like that. And Xbox Live being an example of some of the most egregious conduct.
I saw some online games that are aimed towards kids that, like, 12-year-olds were playing a few years ago. And one of the things they did is they had a really extensive amount of communication they could do. They could say a whole bunch of things.
Right.
But they couldn't actually type anything. It was like a sentence tree. And the reason they did that is that they couldn't put any personal information, like what kind of sports team they're on, where they lived, their phone numbers. Any of that kind of information couldn't be addressed. But general conversations like, hey, great job, could be. And it was a pretty complicated structure, just didn't happen to have nouns that were real-world nouns. And it seems to me you could do similar things in the gaming environment where you just restrict the language excessively. You do not allow full typing, right?
What are you saying? Are you saying that they were able to...
You could communicate together.
Focus what kinds of things you could say out loud?
Yeah, it wasn't verbal. They weren't speaking, they were typing. It was a text interface.
Typing.
So it wasn't typing of a keyboard, it was typing of words. So you'd say, you would build sentences with your limited word set that was available.
Oh, I see. You'd click on words that
were
available.
Right. I was at...
Yeah,
store,
refrigerator, you know, poetry.
Right.
Okay.
So it was never typed. Now, what you're talking about is that it's text, but it's also a lot of spoken words.
Yeah.
Right. And so, of course, from the voice, you can normally tell gender. And so people can be gender specific in their insulting. Are you talking about filtering that real time, somehow modifying that?
I don't really know because I'm just learning about this. But it sounds like they're trying to figure out some way to...
Not be a jerk.
To automate people who are being jerks,
yeah,
basically.
Well, and let's also be clear about what this type of harassment is. Because for example, when I was harassing you with regard to your playing ability or the banter, it was, one, we were already friends and somehow remained friends after I did this. And we would go back and forth, and it was something targeted towards you. Like, you missed a shot, so I would make fun of your aim.
Right.
You know, like, or...
Uh-huh, you don't have parallax, that kind of thing.
Right, that type of thing. But when we talk about women in gaming, a lot of times it's you have someone harassing them, not because of the way that they're playing or their conduct online.
Or how they know them.
But simply
it's the
because
mere fact of their gender.
Yeah, the fact that they are a member of a 50% of the population.
Right.
Yeah.
But... Only 10% of the population on the gaming space.
Well, it
or
depends
at least
on
some
the
of those
game.
Games.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, so the automated perspective that you're thinking, like, couldn't we just figure out a way to detect the trolling and terminate it? I would say that doing that programmatically by sensing the kind of content they had would be extremely complicated. It'd be easier in text, but it would be still very hard to remove potentially volatile statements.
Yeah.
And, of course... But you really need to change how people are. So what I would suggest in an environment like that is really good controls to allow other people to say, I'm offended by this user. And enough people say, I'm offended by this user, and that user just doesn't have a voice anymore.
Yeah, sort of flagging them or something.
Yeah. And I think that makes sense. I would assume that I'm glad the New York Times is covering it. I think it's an interesting problem, and it's definitely rampant in that space, I think. And I know that there's lots of studies about the violence in video games, that sexuality in video games can be modifying people's experience, and maybe it doesn't. And we cover this every once in a while. It's a really hard topic to actually get because humans are complex.
Yeah,
but
and
there
it's
is
age
a lot.
Old, right? I mean,
yeah,
it sort of feeds into the whole Dark Knight Rises conversation too.
But you know, if you see the characters in these games, they're all these first-person shooters. The characters are superhuman, right? They're extremely amazingly athletically physique, except for the women who have really big breasts always. Like, I don't know if there's ever...
They're so top heavy.
Right.
This poor thing.
Right.
And they look like Barbie dolls. They just happen to be stronger than normal people with that physique.
Right. It's it doesn't fit.
Yeah, strong men end up being really strong, like muscular and stuff like that, but they don't really show muscular women. They just
big chest women. I like it when they've got like armor and the armor is more enhancing of the breasts. It's like, why are you, you have armor, you need to protect yourself. So there's definitely that kind of visual support in the game for sexualizing women. And I'm wonder, and I wouldn't, I'm not going to say that that definitely correlates to the community being that way.
I wouldn't think so. I mean, yeah. if a woman looks amazing, I don't think that automatically leads to saying hateful things.
No.
Do you know what I mean?
No.
Those two.
But objectifying women definitely leads to that.
Making them
less than human. And so the other aspect of it, of course, is that when you're in a, when you're in that kind of environment and you're being competitive with people and you're trying to upset them, I mean, one of the things, one of the tactics in games like that is to really upset your other player because they'll play worse. So in a competitive sense, you almost want everybody to be extremely angry at you. Mm-hmm. And that makes them less able to play the game effectively. So,
but then you get into things like the woman who started the Kickstarter campaign and got all those sort of threatening emails and posts and things.
Yeah,
and then she posted those and then people responded and then... You know, that's like totally outside of the game sphere.
Absolutely.
Like a grown man in Ontario creating a game where you could punch her and over the image of her face, a series of cuts and bruises would appear until the whole screen turns red.
Ugh.
That has nothing to do with game strategy.
No. What I'm saying, though, is in the game strategy, there's this perspective of being very hostile verbal to each other.
Yeah.
And in that environment, when everybody's being hostile verbal, there's no self-etiquette of being polite. And so it produces a space where it's easy to be really horrible. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what I'm wondering, like maybe we need to tone that. We need to look at that
and
way
of
playing.
That's what makes me wonder about flagging, like flagging someone as being offensive, because... What that entails is that the community is self-policing.
Right,
some
which they're not clearly right now.
Are not.
And well, that, some of these that communities exists right
are,
now.
A majority most, are the offenders. So right. How do you...
But isn't it true that in most of these games, those systems are built in to kick players? I mean, especially when you're hosting your own server, you can definitely kick out players. And sometimes votes occur to kick out players.
Yeah, and a lot of times because those players are that much better than everyone else.
Right.
I mean, it's not necessarily because of bad conduct.
But that
it's,
the tools already exist does not help make it happen,
right.
Unfortunately.
But there is a culture of self-policing in the online community. I mean, that's how you come up with things like 4chan and Anonymous.
Right.
Right? I mean, there's people working together to create the kind of society that they want online.
Yeah.
And it would be lovely if that were to
happen in the gaming
space.
Well, on the contrary,
they are
working to make a society that they want online, but that society they want is not necessarily
the society for everybody.
Like, when you talk about 4chan or Anonymous... that is very much mob mentality, and you may agree with the mob many times, but at the same time, it's a mob, and they can go the other way as well.
Yeah, but I think that's also why you have people like Jane McGonigal trying to create games that encourage sociable behavior and good interactions between people and working for the greater good.
Mm-hmm.
They're not the same as shoot 'em up games, certainly.
So
they might have a different appeal, but at least providing some sort of example of how you'd like it to be.
Anita
seems like a good way to go.
Anita
as well.
Sarkeesian, has the Kickstarter, and she's at $158,000. She only requested $6,000. What was she actually doing with this money in this Kickstarter campaign?
To just do a study on how women are portrayed in the games themselves, talk more the character issue that you were talking about earlier.
So it's $150,000 to do a study on that.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Which is good. I mean, you need studies take a lot of money.
She'll have money for that and then a study about the other thing that she's been experiencing. I think.
Of course, the thing that's interesting is that we have a lot of studies about video game and it seems to always waver back and forth on what kind of effect it has. We had a study a while ago about the use of video games to help autistic people communicate better social skills and using video games to teach those skills that was very effective. And then the question, of course, is, well, if you're modifying people's behavior with games intentionally with a study like that, then what's happening with these random non-trials, just games that are producing really disgusting environments for people?
In other words, people's behavior is being adjusted automatically,
right.
Whether that's happening consciously or not is
right.
The question.
All right, let's go on with other topics. Thank you very much, Bonnie. Wonderful.
Okay.
Al, hi.
Hey, how's it going?
Good.
You ever feel like you're being followed?
Not all the time.
Well, if you're using the browser on a computer, you are being followed.
Yes.
All the time. And it's not because you went somewhere and you signed up for something, and it's not because you have an email address or whatever. It's because you're using any browser on any computer, on any platform. You're constantly being ranked, followed, tracked. It's going on all the time. Well, there's an application that I've been using for a long time, and this was kind of spurred on by a listener who wrote in and said he had tried some service to
some other service. Yeah, it's like this.
And my thought was that I've been using this one called Ghostery. It's at ghostery.com, and it's completely free. And what you do is you just install it, and it blocks all of the trackers. That it blocks over 1,000 different trackers. And as you go to each web page, you'll get like a
kind of an assessment of what's happening.
Yeah, it'll pop up with, you know, like a growl message that shows you the list of all the things that you're on. And you'd be surprised. You go anywhere, and there's just like this 12, you know, this little, you know, a growl thing pops up, and you've got like 12 things on there that it's blocked.
You know, I have a tendency to dislike these kind of systems inherently. And the reason, I think, is that early on, virus selling would always promote these cookies as, oh, we're cleaning your machine. Look, you've got 700 things on this machine. You need our product.
Right.
When they're trying to sell antivirus stuff, they were using the idea of privacy, and they were misrepresenting that. So it made this bitter taste in my mouth whenever I hear about this kind of anti-tracking software. If only early on it was privacy and security, and they were two different things, and we thought of it that way, I probably wouldn't be offended. And now that I'm looking at it, it's like, yeah, of course, that you need this kind of, I don't want to say protection, but you need this kind of
awareness
and anonymity. It's nice to be anonymous online.
It's amazing to go somewhere and realize there's like 5 different ad companies tracking what you're doing right now.
Yeah.
And the other thing that Ghostery has is in the preferences, you can say, well, you know, block everything except when I go to this website, because there are reasons where you might want people to, you may want to, you may want Amazon to remember things, or there are some websites that you're okay with, and you can you can add those into the Ghostery preferences so that when you go there, it doesn't block them, or it only blocks specific ones. You know, to an example of, you know, it blocks like Google Analytics, all different kinds of things. And the way that Ghostery makes money is that they collect anonymous statistics about the things on pages that load. So they're able to provide anonymous things and saying this many trackers are doing this, these things, these elements loaded on pages.
Let's go ahead and describe this and kind of like what's actually happening when we visit a website. We'll have Bonnie over here be the website we're trying to visit.
Yeah, okay.
Right?
Okay.
So you'll be Boing Boing. Really cool. Boingboing.net. And when I go to your site, Boing Boing is a bad example because they probably don't have very many of these. But when I go to your site, one of the things that you're doing to make money is you're selling advertising space on the top of your page. Mm-hmm. So you have an ad banner.
Yeah.
Okay. And so your ad banner is actually not served by you, because you need the person that's paying you money to actually serve the banner. And in that way, they know how many times it's been served. So you ask Al to serve your banners. So now when I go to you, you say, load this image, and now I'm talking to Al as well. And Al's this giant, horrible, evil advertising conglomerate. And the thing about him is he's going to give me a little piece of code that identifies me. So now I've gone to Boing Boing. Now later I'm going to go over to MSNBC and do some news reading, and Miles is going to be MSNBC. And he happens to have the same ads as Al. So now he says
the same ad service.
Which is Al, right? So Miles says, okay, this is my page of MSNBC. Here's my story about Munchkins. And go ahead and read this. And so I start reading it. And when I get that page, an ad is served. And again, it's Al. And now Al already knew that I went to Boing Boing. And I also know that I went to MSNBC. And that's what Al can determine from this. That's the privacy we're talking about. It's it's being able to track, because the one kind of central system knows a lot about you.
Well, and it's what pages you go to, it's what stories you click on, so that Al knows which kind of ads to put in your face so that you're more likely to click on them.
That's right. So over on the Boing Boing story, I read a lot about knitting.
Yeah. Speaking of...
So then he knows to give me knitting ads.
Speaking of Boing Boing, so in the time that you just said, okay, let's have Bonnie be the website that we're going to go to, I actually was...
Went
poking around on my iPad and thought, I wonder if Ghostery, because normally it's browser specific, so you install Ghostery per browser, so Firefox or Safari or whatever. So I thought, I wonder if they have it for iOS. Sure enough, they've got an iOS client, and in the time that, since you said that, I just tapped a couple buttons, installed Ghostery that quickly, and went to Boing Boing.
Mm-hmm.
And
what do they have on Boing
immediately
Boing?
Has... It's got 9 things.
Miles, do you want to like look at what those
things
are?
These are the things it has. It's got ad...
More than 9. You're scrolling up, so it...
Well, it says 9 plus.
Oh.
9 so plus more than plus. 9. Okay.
Yeah.
So it's got AdMob, Bizo, Discus, DoubleClick, Evdeon Notice, Federated Media, Google Plus One, Google AdSense, Google Analytics, Google Custom Search Engine, Quantcast, Scorecard Research Beacon, and ValueClick MediaPlex.
That's all at Boing Boing?
These are just from loading the first Boing Boing. And if I tap on one of these, like...
Wait, was it boingboing.net or boingboing.com?
It's
boingboing.net.
Okay, yeah. Wow. And I'm surprised that Boing Boing has that much stuff on there.
And yeah, so too. I can sit there and I can say, well, I want these guys blocked.
Is that just because of the ads or what?
Some of it has to do with the ads. The plus one has to do with the social media. Yeah. Federated login has to do with being able to log in from different services.
So I clicked on one of them, MediaPlex, because not only does it show you all the things that it blocked, but you can tap on and see, well, what is this company doing?
So what is MediaPlex?
So MediaPlex, it says, what they do is they provide cross-channel advertising technology solutions and services that enable marketers to achieve one-to-one messaging, greater efficiencies, and a competitive through insightful reporting and analytics. So
I'm feeling nauseous. The ads
okay,
the,
and this is just one of the things with a pretty, I mean, Boing Boing is, it's not, I don't think of them as a surreptitious, creepy.
Not at all.
But they're all about sort of free access to the internet and things being fair and plain.
This isn't specific to websites that are like weird, like Wares sites or something. This is like every website.
The writers on Boing Boing,
it's just a blog,
hate this kind of stuff.
Well,
what they're writing.
And just to show you the easy use, I mean, I installed it since we started talking about it, and then it checked it.
So the listener, David, actually wrote in about this, and he said, suggested we take a look at do not track plus.com, and you suggested Ghostry. There's a lot of these types of services out there. You've been using Ghostry for a while.
Yeah, and I know that they actually do sell the information they get, which is anonymous information.
Oh, this is what I wanted to hear. But it is. Money.
Yeah, how did they make
it? But it's basically how long it took the tracking elements to load, who's tracking what. So they're getting a sort of a thermometer on the industry. Yeah, it's industry information that's anonymous, that is not tracking you. So there is a financial interest from Ghostry to do this. Mm-hmm. And
therefore
providing
it's a free
service. They're providing a service for you.
They're not charging for the service.
But they couldn't even if they wanted to, they couldn't even contact you to say thank you because they don't know who you are.
Right.
But they know, you know, what browser's been used, what advertising things, most, you know, how often is MediaPlex coming up?
I think it's fascinating because if you talk to some of these other companies that were just being blocked by Ghostry, they would say the same thing. Oh, we're not tracking individuals. We're tracking general trends. We're tracking, of course, the ones that are highly targeting ads to you.
Yeah.
They don't know who you are, but they know where you've been.
And they're tracking your
browser. They have an idea of you. So that question of piracy, you are trading some private information to Ghostry to allow them to do this.
They're just not private information. Not,
well,
not,
your browsing habits, where you went, is
they're not
associated
tracking
with,
where you went after you've been there. It's once the page loads.
No, but they're loading that data. They're loading that data. And that's what I'm saying, is that they're collecting some trend information.
It's about the tracking elements that were encountered, not the user that encountered those elements. That's what they say.
Yes, that's their idea. Yeah.
So then for whom is that information useful that Ghostry is collecting? Who do they sell it to?
Industry. You know, I mean, it literally...
Or which industry?
Yeah.
It would be the ad industry. It's data. It's statistics. It's about who's using what things are coming up. But this allows it to be blocked.
They also get to promote their product more because of they have numbers that say how prevalent it is.
Right.
Interesting. I'd really love to hear what... I'll contact Boing Boing and ask them why they have all that stuff on their site.
Yeah,
really,
I mean, I...
Because I'm questioning... At this point, I'm questioning whether that's true and whether they're adding... Because...
We're back to your original objection to this sort of thing.
Yeah. I have a little bit of a... about it, in that it's highly marketed, and therefore it concerns me. It's a highly marketed message, always concerns me. They seem like a good company. They seem like they're doing what they are saying they're doing.
But they have to make money too. I mean, one of them is DoubleClick, you know.
Right.
One of them is Google Analytics. Now, Google Analytics is used, it's a strip of code that you put on all your websites that is essentially used for your own purposes. Like I've put it on sites so that you can see where people have gone, what are the most popular pages on your website, what are the things people are clicking on. So some of these things, you know, kind of, you know, not a big deal.
Yeah, and they do have a lot of ads on, Boing Boing does have a lot of ads.
Yeah.
They're definitely making money now.
It's amazing how many things, you know, even, you know, installing this thing, you can't believe how much stuff pops up.
So what we're talking about is this product called Ghostery. I believe it's ghostery.com, but mm-hmm. everything we talk about today on GeekSpeak, we'll have up on geekspeak.org a little bit later in the day, and you can look up and read more about what we're talking about. Thank you so much. Mm-hmm. Miles, hi.
I was wondering if you want to do the mid-break before I moved on to...
My name's Lyle Troxell. In the air with me is Bonnie Jean Primsch, Miles Elam, and Al Luckow. We are covering news the entire day today because Rick is away, and we love talking about tech news. We do have some geek... what do we call them? Geek bits? Miles, get a geek bit for us?
I actually don't.
Oh, anybody has a visual news story that's more appropriate for this segment? Go ahead.
I have a
do that one. Yes, please do.
There's a now this only works in Chrome, and you can download it. It's an extension for Chrome, and it's for when you use Facebook in Chrome. There's an app called Unbaby Me. It's at unbaby.me. And what it does is it deletes pictures of babies from your newsfeed. So it detects when people are keeps posting pictures of their babies, and they replace it with another picture.
Bonnie, do you like this?
It's a funny idea, you know. And you know, I of course want to see babies,
right?
But there are those out there who do not, and they've had enough babies to, you know, they've got enough babies and they don't need any more. And this is supposedly able to do that, and
is it facial detection?
It's uses facial detection, and it uses the word adorable.
Anytime, you know, the adorable goes
up. Yeah, any of those things. So it's kind of funny. It's funny. Awesome. It works sort of, but it's worth a mention, and it's a geek bit. But I don't think it works that great. So
it's too fun.
I forget who it was, but somebody came up with a similar sort of thing for any kind of Olympic coverage. They'd just be like
remove
a black bar over anything Olympic.
I could see that. That'd work.
People are already tired of the Olympics.
I want to see more pictures of babies, especially Miles' baby. He's subtle on his sharing.
Yeah, why just babies? Why not?
Kitties would be more annoying to me.
Kitten cats, yeah. Seems more prevalent.
Yeah.
The kitten problem.
So I'm looking at the source code of boingboing.net. This is the thing about the web, is that everything that you actually load on your page is viewable by you. You can view the source and see where it's mm-hmm. coming from. And sure enough, it's just tons of stuff in here. And, you know, they've got a script that support that does something for the iPhone. So that's something you probably saw. They've got Typekit is in here, which is I believe Typekit is a formatting thing for text editing. But these are all served from different domain names. And, of course, Google APIS, which is Google Analytics.
Well, I tried geekspeak.org.
Yeah, you probably didn't see much on there, right?
Actually, got three.
Oh, yeah, Google Plus, Facebook, and what else?
Yeah, that's it.
Google Analytics.
It's Google Analytics.
Google Analytics.
And so those really aren't...
You guys are okay, is what you're saying.
No,
of course,
Google
we do it. It's fine.
Yeah, Facebook and Google Plus is so that you can...
The new site will not have Google Analytics on it, because there's no real reason to have analytics. It's... We don't get enough coverage. It's too depressing.
We already know the 12 people that go to
That's
our
right.
site.
Yeah, and we pay them.
Yeah.
Thanks, you guys.
You are listening to GeekSpeak. GeekSpeak on KOSP is supported by Cruzo Works, a rentable workspace located in the heart of downtown Santa Cruz, featuring 40 new private offices, meeting rooms, an organic cafe, and 100 megabits per second Wi-Fi. More information is at cruzo.com/cruzoworks or at 459-6301. Al, you want to go take a look at cruzo.com?
Oh, man.
See how they're
you got to know now everywhere.
It's funny.
And we'll move on with the news of Bonnie. What? What? Did I skip you?
Yeah.
All right, good. Move on the news with Bonnie. No, go ahead.
This was a very interesting week. Last week I wasn't on the show, and this was because I had my 20-year high school reunion, which was awesome. A lot of people can't say that about their reunions, but I loved the people that I went to high school with.
People stop spitting on you?
But it was a very strange thing, and this is something that we all remarked upon, which is 20-year reunions are usually marked by – you see some of the people that you saw at the 10-year reunion, then there are folks that you hadn't seen since graduation – and you had to try to remember who was that person. Oh, wait, I had
and
a crush on you.
And you know nothing about them.
Right. You had no idea where they went. In fact, you didn't even remember that they existed. And then you go, oh, my God, yes, I remember that time. You know,
sure.
And now we have social media. Now we have things like Facebook. And a lot of us are friends on Facebook. And we would hear, like, we had friends of friends. You know, so even the folks that you weren't directly close to and you wouldn't friend them, they were friends of a friend of yours
right.
from high school. So we got there and... We all kind of knew what was going on.
Right.
Like, we all we knew where they were working, like what their career was. We knew if they had kids and if it was recent.
And even if you didn't know right off the bat, as they told the story, you're like, oh yeah, right, Tahunga, right? I mean, you start knowing right away where they were. I went, my high school reunion was, my 20-year high school reunion was 2 weeks ago, and I had the same experience. We all had a Facebook page to do the whole event, and we all knew who was coming, and it was a very much a reminder of what was on Facebook.
Right.
So, so was it anticlimactic?
Right.
What
so
are you guys saying?
Yeah. So the question came up.
Going back to high school, of course it's anticlimactic. Yeah. Like, who cares?
Well, the conversation came up about that, the fact that we all had this, we were primed, as it were, to know what we were talking about, mm-hmm. and whether that was a good thing or a bad thing.
Did you take have a deeper experience, do you think? Did you connect more? I think it got
rid of a lot of the fluff. It got rid of the, oh, wait, who? Okay. And how? What have you been up to?
And so do you have anything to talk about?
Yes, absolutely. You got rid of all of the probing questions to try to, the generic probing
you
questions.
You had a more efficient experience.
Well, exactly. Yeah. For example, there's this woman that I wasn't really close with, but I know on Facebook, and I knew that she ran a restaurant. So when I saw her, I was like, what is it like? It's a lot of work. She's like, yeah, we work 7 day weeks. And it's a lot, you know, it just, I was able to jump right into kind of more about
to
what
the middle of the conversation.
Her life. Yeah. Yeah. And that was kind of neat. Do you think it's fundamentally changing? And you only have a certain amount of
20-year reunions or the high school reunions are never going to be the same.
Right.
They are a different animal now. Absolutely.
But they'll still happen.
Do you think they'll fade away?
No.
They'll still happen.
Yeah. You also have a good chance of knowing. Well, one, we're able to get a lot more people.
Right,
we had over 100
people
there.
Oh,
right.
Okay.
Which is a non-trivial section of our senior class. And at the same time, it's this, when you have that many people who are already in contact with one another, you have the ability to market it. Say, hey, we're having a 20-year reunion. Everyone sign up. Here were the tickets. Here's where you can buy them. Here's where we're going to, you know.
Make it easier for people to
get there. Yeah, and you also get a sense of how many people actually care. So instead of going to the high school reunion and there's only a few people there, people you didn't want to see, you have this anticipation, this, oh, yeah, I remember that person. Or if that person isn't signed up, you can message them and say, hey, I'd really like you to go. Like, mm-hmm. I really want to see you. I was just thinking about that time. We were, you know, throwing computers into the ocean.
So rather than kind of take away all of the excitement and sense of surprise, I guess, at an event like that, it sounds like it makes it more likely to be a good event.
I think it heightened it. I think it added marketing to the high school reunion experience so that it kind of brought up some hype about it. And when we got there, I guess the people who didn't want to see any of the people just decided not to come. And those who really missed folks from 20 years ago showed up, and everyone was genuinely, I mean, it was a wonderful experience. It was a really warm and loving experience.
So go to your high school reunion. Make sure to participate on Facebook.
I actually want to go to Miles' high school reunion.
Yeah, it sounds better than
all this. Yeah. I don't remember that from mine, but whatever.
Yeah, but you were pre-Facebook.
Yeah, that's true. My 20-year one was pre-Facebook.
See, that's the difference. See, and you did not enjoy yours as much.
I enjoyed it, but, you know, that whole loving, you know, aspect I didn't.
So, Al, I went to cruiseout.com and took a look. It looks like they've got Google Analytics.
That's it? Well, they've got a Twitter badge on their
and
front
Twitter,
page.
And Twitter, too. Yeah.
And so they're pretty...
And pretty minimal. That's pretty safe.
Yeah,
that's
pretty minimal. Cool. Yeah. And, and there's nothing wrong with Google Analytics. I mean, it's Google, but it's really just... You know,
you only say that because they're not evil yet.
Well,
or we don't know they're evil yet.
Google is taking, is taking that traffic data, but it is not unique to a person, and mostly it's for the site to be able to say, like, what is my traffic pattern?
Right. And Google does have a very clear privacy guideline document that they publish, mm-hmm. and so there's a lot of that kind of thing. In fact, yeah, I think you can actually find out what information they know about you by going through their system. Like, Google's pretty transparent about this kind of stuff. But anyway, thanks for the high school reunion update. Did you meet any technical people?
Well, no, I'm talking about, like, from a technical standpoint, this is how it's affecting these things that we have had for many years.
Yes.
This is a general tradition, but the tradition is fundamentally changing.
I would argue that
social media is affecting our meat space.
Yeah.
I would argue that high school reunions will become less important. And because of that, I think that there's a – well, maybe not. Maybe it becomes more important because you care about the people more. That's interesting. We'll see what it looks like in 10 years. when we do our 30th.
Or, you know, in 15 years when Ben finally has his 20th.
He's not even here, Miles. He's not even here.
All the more reason.
Bonnie, what else is interesting to you in the news?
Well, I got interested about this guy, Cairo Bichet. I don't know who he is, but once again, Boing Boing is one of my only sources for tech news. Talking about the relationship between sociability and privacy. And there's like a couple of things. I think they're two distinct things. One is passive sharing, where you see every once in a while on your Facebook that somebody read an article and you're like, okay. Or they'll provide a link like, hey, I thought this article was interesting, and you click on it, and then you wind up in some weird kind of Facebook-y precursor where they want
you to log in, add the app to your profile.
Yeah, and I usually try to ignore that. And if I can't, then I just don't read the article. But I guess some people are clicking through, and then on their Facebook winds up being a little thing, oh, Bonnie's reading this article on nastiness, you know,
right.
or whatever it is.
Right.
Could be quite embarrassing. that's my angle.
That's kind of a phishing thing when they do that.
But yeah. also, yeah. you know, if you're not expressly giving permission to someone to tell everybody what it is you're looking at or reading or visiting online, that's a little creepo.
Well, that's the thing, though, is when the Facebook prompt comes up, they are asking for permission. People just aren't recognizing it as this new contract.
It's also you're asked over and over again, and humans are variable in their response. So you might be having a really great, joyous time right now, and you know, eating a beautiful blueberry muffin, and you're going through your mom's pictures. And you're like, oh, cool. And then a link comes up, and it's like, oh, you want to go share this? Oh, yeah, sure, what the heck? And so you're in that joyous space, and then later on, when you're angry and frustrated because Miles is insulting you all the time, you run in. They already have your access, right? And now you're reading on how to murder your friend, and it's showing up in Miles's feed, right?
So, and I look at it and go, hey!
So it's really about that one time. You only have to get permission once to then for them to be able to do that. And
okay, that's even creepier.
You know what a good one is? Is the one where somebody posts it, it's already gotten into somebody else, had fallen for this, and then you see somebody you trust in their postings, it says, hey, find out who's tracking you and who's looking at your profile. And you,
oh, right.
And you go, well, I tried it and it works great, you know, and then you click
ad,
on
right?
it and then
thing.
Well, but it's in their page, so that you click on it because, oh, I know Lyle, he's in his page. And then you click on it, and now it's in your page.
Right.
As soon as you clicked on it, mm-hmm. and it's this like weird virus
yes,
thing.
It's
and,
nasty.
You know, and every time I see that, I try to go, do not click on
it. I do my best not to add any kind of Facebook apps unless I've initiated that process.
I clean them all out.
And you know, Bonnie, when I'm seeing a link, I'm like, oh, I want to read that. It's a story about Boing Boing.
Yeah.
and if I click that, and then it prompts me for something, I go back, I look at the text that they've shown me, and I do a Google search for that text.
Okay.
And then I go find that story.
So that's the workaround, ladies
and
gentlemen.
You just kind of avoid it completely.
Well,
and this is common for newspapers as well.
Yeah, and this is not a new phenomenon because this has always been the case with Facebook. So
yes.
every time that you've seen and so-and-so has made this point on Mafia Wars,
uh-huh.
you know, join in and try to, you know, do better. Like, this is something we've seen for quite a while, and this is the thing that we've been railing against for years, and now it's becoming more pervasive and being more noticeable. It's not just an innocent game anymore. It's now...
Just make sure you go into your Facebook preferences and go under apps and then see the list there and then just remove them. And I do that. You know, I mean, everybody's always trying to get me to, oh, it's Ancestry. It's your family tree. And you think, oh, yeah, I know Uncle Bob. Well, when you do that, you've installed an app. So it's good to go into your Facebook preferences and just see what apps are running.
Yeah.
You know, because they're there and they're going to be doing creepy stuff to you.
And that actually reminds me of another one. All the people that send me the invite saying, hey, birthday reminder, you should go check on with this. Facebook already does the birthday reminder out of the box. There is no reason to use those.
Okay. So, I mean, this guy's point is that there must be some sort of a wall that will hit at some point, right? I mean, it isn't sort of like the basic human need for privacy going to kick in at some point?
Hasn't thus far in the U.S.
Is there some point where... you know, all these apps and things will be just more universally offensive to people that they just won't be a thing that advertisers and
They're universally offensive to me now.
Yeah, on the contrary, as they become more and more common, people will probably just incorporate them into their lives and just it becomes a normal background noise.
You know what's really interesting about these apps? I have a lot of apps enabled in my Facebook. I'm looking through, I probably have 60 of them or so.
A lot of these are
iPhone apps that want permission to post to my Facebook account, which I've given permission through my face, you know, through my phone, that I actually want to do that.
Instagram.
Wait, you have 60 iPhone apps?
He's got it. Like 600.
Of course, I have 60 iPhone apps.
New fiction.
But you know, I look through this Airbnb, Prismatic, Yelp, Highlight, Turntable, Tumblr. You know, these are all things that I am aware of and know what they are, and I've approved them. And then there's Ancestry in here, which is one of those ones that's really nasty. I'm like, well, how'd that get in there? I don't remember doing that. Mm-hmm. And I look through it, it has access for my contact information and access for friends' contact information, and I did not know it had that, right? Ooh, so yeah. I'm definitely removing that app. I can't block that app permanently. I can delete all app activity. Okay, that's kind of interesting. So all the activity it's done so far, I can delete it, which means that if it's posted on other people's sites,
the history's gone.
At least that goes away. But yeah, so this is very pervasive, and it's easy for you to get added in, you know, accidentally. I'm also curious about whether at some point the privacy features were such that if a friend of mine that was trusted was inviting me in an app, it auto said yes. Because maybe it did, you know,
if what now? If you were invited by a friend to join in on something, and because you're cozy with the friend, you've got some sort of automatic yes to whatever your friend suggests you sign up for?
I wouldn't be surprised if Facebook did that. So in Facebook, you can have special friends. I don't know what it's called.
Okay, but, yeah.
And what that is a more selected, you get actually text messages and stuff when they post something. So Al's on that list for me. So when he posts a picture, I always see it, right?
Okay, yeah.
Because I get notified in my notification system. So the thing is, it's possible there's a preference somewhere in the privacy that says if Al invites you to an app, automatically say yes because he's part of this favorites friend list.
Yikers.
And I'm just saying that I don't think it's like that, but I wouldn't be surprised
if it
would.
Surprise you.
And the reason is it's really what the system they have is extremely complicated. And once you get to a certain point, it's hard to communicate that complexity. The language we have is insufficient to really communicate what is going on. And that's one of these problems with privacy.
Is that why it's so hard for Facebook to tell you what it is they're up to?
I think it is. Oh. I mean, if you try to explain, Bonnie, what you think is private and who can share what, you know, you're involved at KOSP. So you might say, well, KOSP people can know where I live. Well, maybe not. What if somebody new to KOSP you've never met before kind of creeped you out in the elevator? You don't really know who they are. All of a sudden, well, I don't really want people at KOSP to know because you don't know who's here.
Right.
And then, okay, that maybe that works. But what if one of those people says, everybody that I trust trusts me and vice versa. All of a sudden, they've opened up to someone that's not trustworthy.
Mm.
So can you really communicate that succinctly, what you feel comfortable with? I don't think you can.
Well,
I don't think I can.
I mean, in normal space, I'm sort of choosing the interactions that I have. There isn't that kind of automatic sort of viral spreading of permissions that you're talking about.
Right. Right. For someone to post something on your front door, they have to go to your house.
Yeah.
It's a very different kind of thing than in Facebook.
Well, it's a question of scale. It's like our normal interaction just amplified by 100. And so you have to
I think that's the thing is that we use a lot of intuition and we don't use language very much to describe what we feel safe and comfortable with.
Or logic.
We might say something like, I don't like that guy, or I don't like that that's going on. Why
but
is my picture?
You can't identify the individual factors that are giving you the general creep.
Right. And to say, I want an algorithm that does that. I don't know what my algorithm would be. You know, some days I'm really happy with it. Some days I'm not. Right.
That's
I might see a picture
from moment to moment.
Right. I might see a picture of one of my kids in a play. And one day I'd go, oh, I don't like that. You know, in a newspaper, right?
Mm-hmm.
And another day, I'd be like, oh, cool, they made the cover. And that mood-changing thing is something it's very hard to assess programmatically.
Mm-hmm.
But that's more extreme complicated. There's more subtlety that I don't think we even have a good grasp on. Who we invite, and think of how hard it is to figure out who you're going to invite to a party at your house and how you're not going to offend a friend or you're going to offend a friend. You're not sure where, and so you want to make sure you're gentle about it.
Right.
That is a really detailed thing we do, and we don't know how to do that.
But what?
People have entire academic careers based upon this.
Yeah.
there's this sort of I think what we're talking about is a preference for opting in to something rather than having to opt out and know that there's something to opt out of.
Yeah.
Why is that kind of the norm in internet space? Is that for advertisers?
Well, I think one of the things is you'd have to explain what you're doing at a pretty complex level. Right off the bat to get them to say
but
yes.
Why are you doing
and the
it?
System won't work without them saying yes. The reason why Facebook worked is because it was so pervasive with its privacy settings. It was so easy for your information to be shared. That's why it grew so quickly.
Except that when Facebook first started, their security settings were much more locked down.
Right.
They've been steadily expanding
needed.
That over time. So
yeah,
the
but
privacy
still,
must
eroded.
Be some commercial
at,
advantage.
At every
that.
Level, there
well, there's
was...
There's absolutely a commercial advantage to making data available.
But I recall being invited into Facebook. I was invited in for my cousin who was in her 20s, right, at college. And so that's where Facebook was first released, .edu domain. So I was able to add in because I work at a university and I was able to go on more quicker than most public, right?
Yeah.
But when I went on, I remember looking at her feed about a party she went to with friends of hers you know, picture of her friends drinking at a party. I didn't know if they were 21 or not. But all of a sudden, because she invited me, I'm able to see pictures of her friends drinking.
Yeah.
And right away, I'm like, wow, that's kind of creepy. Right? So it was like, that friend didn't suggest that it would work. I mean, there was always, right off the bat, there was this very public perspective on it that we're not used to. It would be very different if Fiona invited me into her house and she had pictures in a scrapbook and I was flipping through them and saw her friends,
right,
because it's just one person. But she has 600 people.
It's whoever's
right?
looking at the page.
Whoever's looking at the page and from wherever. So, I don't know. I think this space, I don't have a lot of conclusions except to say, I don't think that they're failing intentionally. I don't think they're doing anything. They're doing something very new, and that's why it's so strange to us humans. We're just not used to it yet, and we don't have a language for it. I mean, I don't think everybody understood really what online... I mean, Miles and I have been talking about online privacy for years. We're web developers. We've always talked about it. But it's now a public discourse.
Mm-hmm.
Legislation exists because of it. And that's all because it's a new space that we're trying to figure out. And I don't know.
There aren't that many people that have been in the industry for that long to be able to say, I know exactly how this works. And so I know some of the repercussions of making this
technical decision. The blowback or whatever. So my sort of broader social question is, how does it work? Are we just going to get more and more used to less and less privacy?
Yes.
Or is it going to pendulum over to some extreme and then we'll come to some kind of balance point in the middle of privacy? And
I think you have more privacy now than you ever will again.
I don't know that that's necessarily the case. I think it will be the choice of people. For example, in the European Union, they have very strict privacy laws compared to the U.S. And
we might get a pendulum.
And the public has decided that privacy is important to them, and they are going to fight to keep it.
But imagine how complex it is to enable privacy. Every corporation out there wants as much data about you as possible,
yeah,
and they're extremely large, and everything you do flows through that. So unless our society changes a lot to not be interacting with these companies as much, or we regulate them heavily, we're going to be more
right. Yeah, you're talking. Likelihood is we're going to become more. It's just going to become background noise, and we're not going to notice it anymore.
Right now, when you go into Safeway, there's security cameras on you.
Yeah.
Right now, I'm pretty sure they're not doing facial tracking, but it's just a matter of time. Why wouldn't they? Then they'd know who customer came in the door. You wouldn't even need one of those cards. They just know that you're the one that buys Coke and Diet Coke and Snapple.
Or the one who shoplifted last week and is no longer welcome.
This is not about, well, is that possible? Yeah, that's totally easy to do. In fact,
technologically, no problem.
I don't even know a lot about facial recognition software, but I could hack something together for Safeway in a week,
yeah,
right? And that means it's really easy.
I think it might take more than a week, but
of course,
yeah.
You could get some facial stuff. The pixelated masks, those face masks.
Yeah, so then you start going, oh, you can put masks on, you know, masks on, and then maybe they don't give you the discount unless you don't have a mask on.
Yeah, or you have the infrared light on your so that any camera that has
then they just put infrared filters on the front of the CCDs. I mean, it's just a technical.
Here comes the war.
That's the thing. We're already here. I mean, you know, right now we are at stop signs. You go to a stoplight, and if you run the stoplight, they take a picture of your license. It's illegal in California to wear two headphones in your ears at the same time, or to text. Mm-hmm. Those two things are illegal. Yeah, you can get ticketed for them. So it's just a matter of time before those cameras detect that process. That, oh, look, you're at a stop sign and you're looking at a text message, here's a ticket, mm-hmm, and here's a picture of you doing that. Mm-hmm. That's just an implementation issue. It's
right, but if we're going to take that to the extreme, that's all you really have to do is go look at the UK, because the UK has instituted this. If you go to London, there are surveillance cameras on every corner,
yeah,
pretty much.
So, Lyle, you're basically in the it's going to get less and less private camp. You're allowing... Miles, for some kind of pendulum swing back toward the middle, given that there are entire cultures like the EU that are more prone to be more guarded of their privacy, it just might not be America.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah. I'm going with lack of faith in U.S. government on this one.
No one will protect you.
I don't know that I say it as a lack of faith in the U.S. government. I actually think of it as in the
it's
U.S. populace.
Yeah.
Yeah. If the culture starts to get it, then I'd be more likely to think that the pendulum's going to swing. I don't think right now people really get it.
Yeah.
And also, I know a lot about what could happen and what is happening right now, and that doesn't really bother me. And so why? Why does it not bother me that Safeway knows whenever I go into the store? Actually, that doesn't really bother me that much.
Is that because you're an upstanding citizen, Lyle Trucks?
I don't know. No, I'm not. But I don't know.
Well, I scan my club card each time, so they know who I am. Like,
see, and I use a different phone. I use somebody else's phone number that I don't even know who they are.
Yeah, I did that for years.
I don't like that data collection.
They would always say, thank you, Mr. Carlson.
Yeah, I think I'd be like Mrs. Keene or something.
Yeah.
Or or Mr. Luckow? I can't remember.
It's a significant savings.
Yeah, you got to do the savings, right?
I always think of those as please don't overcharge me cards.
Yeah, exactly. Please don't overcharge me cards. You know, we really should just all get those cards and pass them around randomly. That'd be the solution, the social solution to that, right? Al, news story?
Yes. This is something that has been interesting me a lot. It's the, you know, Olympics are going on right now. I don't really usually like to bring up real timely things, but it is the Olympics and there are people watching it. But, you know, if you look at the last Olympics, you'll see that there were a lot of records broken in Beijing in swimming. There were, 25 Olympic swimming records were broken, and 23 of them were by athletes wearing Speedos LZR Racer, which is a special
fancy suit,
you know, swimsuit. And these swimsuits, they have their woven nylon elastane blend. They have water repellent properties. They let you go faster. And a lot of people are saying, well, this is like technological doping. You know, are we really athletes competing against each other, or are the technology you're wearing, the corporations, is that, I mean, one guy who's he's fastest because he won by a fraction of a second and he's wearing this super duper, you know, bikini bottom, you know, bathing suit. You know, so you wonder about this stuff, and it's like you wonder, should we move back to the way the ancient Greeks did the Olympics?
Naked.
Where everybody's nude, you know?
I mean,
then you have a control, you know?
Right.
You have like, okay, well, you're all naked, so there's nothing, you know, you don't have this special toe clip in your bicycle that makes you go faster.
What about implants, though? What about you modify your bone structure with implanted things?
Well, I think that's not a good human test. It's not a good human contest. If we want to have a human contest, I say we move back to nude Olympics.
What about just completely technically yes to everything, see what happens to the human species if they modify themselves to that's kind of interesting too,
you know.
Those are two
they have two different
nudity
Olympics.
Or high tech. I'll go with nudity.
Well, they do call it the XXX Olympics this year.
That's true. Why is that?
I don't really understand that. I thought kids aren't watching this, but I haven't seen anything that shocking.
I think that, you know, when you think about pole vaulting, right? That pole can be made a certain way. You've got to basically regulate all the
Everybody
stuff they use, including the clothing,
pole,
I guess, you know, is the way it is.
The same,
exactly the same one?
Well, you know, how are you going to tell if somebody's really better?
I'm sure that in those situations they are. You know, you've regulated balls for different types of sports. They all use the same type of ball. I'm assuming the equipment in that sense that's part of the sport is that way. It's the added equipment that we...
Right.
I think it'd be interesting to do nude. I don't think that's going to work in this culture. I think it'd work in Europe, but I don't think it's going to work in the United States.
Yeah. Well, it wouldn't work in the United States. You just see all these people swimming with black bars.
You just modified on the camera.
Totally.
Yep.
Could be done.
Miles, got one more story?
Do we have time for it?
Barely. Okay. Talk fast.
Speaking of the Olympics, the speed of sound is too slow. When you have runners that are doing their 100-meter dash or whatever, and they are 1/100th of a second difference, the sound of the starter pistol reaching the person that's closest to the starting pistol versus the person who's furthest from the starting pistol
is more than the amount of time that they win by.
Right.
No way.
What?
Wow.
And now, do they have statistical analysis on this to determine that people that are closer to the pistol actually get there faster?
Well,
that would be interesting.
They were just talking about normally athletes leave between 130, 140
awesome.
Thousandths of
Why
a second.
Why don't they just use a light?
We're streaming and podcasting at KOSP.org. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KOSP Santa Cruz. My name is Lyle Troxell. In the air with me was Miles Elam, Al Luckow, and Bonnie Jean Primsch. Bonnie, I hope you come back again. That was wonderful.
I'd love to.
Stay tuned with Car Talk. I'll be back next week. I'm Lyle Troxell.